my dad's a big skier. He loves skiing, and he taught me to ski when I was really little. And so it's something we've always done together. And I don't know if you all ski, but one thing that can happen is if you're, especially if you're maybe pushing your limits on going down a mountain that's going to challenge you, you can get really tense and just sort of grip your poles and do everything you can not to crash and not to fall. And you can get down to the bottom of the mountain and realize you didn't breathe, you didn't take a single breath the entire way down. And one thing that my dad has always advised me to do is to remember to breathe. You know, think about that experience of skiing down the mountain and not breathing. What you need to do is take those deep breaths, keep your focus on things so that you don't crash, so that you don't fall down. And that applies so much to professional work, especially in leadership. You know, the adrenaline in this work can just get going so fast, especially in the policy sphere. Things are just sort of moving really quickly.
Welcome to Innovating Together, a podcast produced by the University Innovation Alliance. This is a podcast for busy people in higher education who are looking for the best ideas, inspiration, and leaders that will help you improve student success. I'm your host, Bridget Burns. Each week, I partner with a journalist to have a conversation with a sitting college president, chancellor, system leader, or someone in the broader ecosystem who's really an inspiring leader. And the goal is to have a conversation to distill their perspective and their insights gathered from their leadership journey. Our hope is that this is inspiring and gives you something to look forward to each week. This episode, my co-host is Inside Higher Ed co-founder and CEO, Doug Lederman.
We're joined this week by Mamie Voigt, who's president and CEO of the Institute for Higher Education Policy, which is one of the groups around DC that studies higher education and policy. She was previously at EdTrust, which is another organization that's in the same vein. But we're going to talk to Mamie about her background and her work. Welcome, Mamie.
Hi, Doug and Bridget. Nice to see you.
It's great to see you and so excited to finally get a chance to first have you on, because when I talk to people about leaders in the field and especially as folks are looking at a shifting landscape, your name comes up frequently as someone people should definitely talk to. And so I'd heard of you long before I met you and really excited to help people understand what it is IHAP does, but also your background that led to this position. What we'll do is we'll start there in terms of your background, living and working in policy. That's a different vantage point than we typically talk to folks about. And I want to understand kind of what brought you here. And from what I recall, you are actually an engineer, which is a very unusual background for someone who works in public policy. So I'm just wondering if you can walk us through why an engineer would be interested in doing this kind of work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Bridget. And great to be with both of you here today. And you're right. I took a pretty circuitous route to the position where I am now into higher ed policy. I started out in engineering. I'd always been good at and enjoyed math and science growing up. And so engineering seemed like kind of a natural fit for me in college. So I studied civil engineering in college, also minored in women's studies, and then worked in engineering for several years after college. And what I realized in doing that, I was consulting mostly for departments of transportation, so doing a lot of work with state governments. And what I realized was that even the perfect engineering design wouldn't come to fruition, wouldn't have any impact on real people unless the policy were in place to actually make it happen. And that became so clear in even just those first few years of working in engineering. And so with that, I decided that I really wanted to go back and have that bigger, larger scale impact on society, and went back to school for public policy and decided to really dive into that different type of problem solving. I still feel like I lean on my engineering skills quite a bit, because engineering is really about problem solving issues with the physical space and physical world. And here in public policy, it's really about problem solving issues of social significance and impacting people's lives. So I transitioned into public policy. In grad school, I explored both urban policy and planning, since I had been a transportation engineer in that previous life, and then also explored education, social, and family policy, because I'd also always had a real passion for issues of social justice going back to that women's studies minor that kind of paired with the engineering. And what I decided through that work that was that I was much more drawn to the education policy side of things. And so I started off by an internship at the Education Trust while I was in grad school. And that transitioned me right into this world of higher ed policy. I stayed at EdTrust after my internship for several years and then moved on to IHEP, where I continue to this day. So it's been a bit of a like I said, circuitous path, but I see those connections when I look back on it.
I always encourage my kids in their, when they're 20s, talk to people, and you'll find out so many people have taken circuitous routes. I mean, it's just the number of people with straight lines, very few. So it's great to hear somebody explain that. What was it about policy in general and higher ed policy in particular, or education policy in particular, that made you want to focus on it? And how do you see your role in that sphere?
Yeah, so, you know, I have, and I'll take a step back here about our organization, the Institute for Higher Education Policy. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that does research and policy development and advocacy work to advance higher ed opportunities for all students, particularly students of color and students from low-income backgrounds who've historically been left behind by our higher education system. And so really that ability to drive real change for real students is what drew me into the education space. You know, seeing the data about how inequitable our higher education system is in terms of who has access to college, who can afford college, who has the supports to succeed in college and then go on to experience economic mobility from college. The evidence is so clear that the system is deeply stratified by race and by income. And so I wanted to change that. And I saw the ability to change that in the policy sphere. You know, when Bridget and I were talking a little bit in our prep call, she said, you know, policy just seems so boring. Like, how is it exciting for you? How are you interested in it? And I find that so funny because I think of policy as incredibly exciting. It's what drives the real impact and change for real people on the ground. But when I stepped back and thought about that, I realized, oh, I guess I can see on the surface, you know, you look at a Federal Register notice or a piece of statutory text and it's long and it's dry and it can seem kind of boring. But when we can connect those dots between that legislative language or long document and the real impact that it has on students, that's where the excitement and the passion, you know, really comes in. I think about the Pell Grant program, for example. We at IHEP advocate for greater investment in Pell Grants to help students from low-income backgrounds afford college. And the policy side of that means talking with appropriators and going through this long, drawn-out process of advising policymakers about why we need to increase the Pell Grant annually to help students pay for their college costs. And that may seem kind of boring on the front end, but as a result, students can end up with actual dollars in their pockets as a result of those policy changes. We just recently saw a $400 increase to the Pell Grant, and that really came from years and years worth of advocacy efforts from IHEP and other organizations who we work with to really push for that type of change. And as a result, students now have those funds to help pay their tuition, help pay to deal with all of the increasing costs that we're seeing now as a result of inflation. So those real impacts are what really draws me into this work.
It's ironic that I have a master's in public policy, too, and that I asked that question, only because I feel like we have folks that kind of through various exposure, they kind of dabble in policy, but then perhaps they want to go and work in a space where they're actually going to have more human interaction with the effects on the ground. And I like that you have stayed in the policy space. I also love that an internship was a critical aspect of you figuring out and discovering a love for something that wasn't necessarily your discipline. Doug, I'm curious, did you have an internship was it in journalism?
You know, I had multiple internships, including in city government during college. I actually never had a pure journalism internship, but I did it all through school. My internship basically made me realize I didn't want to be in government. So
mine was in a nonprofit, but it was a very slow nonprofit. I came away thinking that, oh, wow, I don't want to work in the nonprofit space, which is ironic because I run a nonprofit, but it's an entrepreneurial nonprofit, which is very different, very fast paced. And so I took the wrong information from it. But still, in both cases, as we think about college to career, it's just really important, I think, for people to draw the through line, the career success and transition from college to those early experiences as we try and carve out more of them. So this is
including what not to do. I mean, that's the thing. I think at internships are some of people have to experiment, and you can't make every try, every attempt isn't going to nail it. So that's why we need people having lots of experiences.
So Mimi, I want to ask you that one of the things that when I was talking to people about you in a good way before we met, the thing that you are most known for is being incredibly trustworthy and highly competent professional. Like people know like that when they talk to you about something, that you're going to lay it out very clearly, that you actually do your due diligence, that you're not going to be biased, all these things. I think those are really valuable things to be known for. Were there certain things you learned from another leader early in your career that helped give you that focus on making sure that you were impeccable with your word, or whatever kind of things have been so helpful? And I'm just wondering about what advice you would give to someone who would like that to be their calling card, that your trustworthiness and integrity. Are there any practices or kind of thoughts that you would share?
As I think back on the various leaders who I've worked with over my career in higher ed so far, there have been a number of different lessons, and a lot of them I think get at that issue of making sure you have every I dotted and every T crossed and make sure that everything you're putting forward is defensible. And the reason for that is because we are advocating for students. We are advocating for a more equitable and just higher education system. And to do that, we need to make sure that every single thing that we have is fully buttoned up to make our arguments really solid. So when I think back on some of those experiences with other leaders in the field, I've been incredibly fortunate to work with some really fantastic people. So we mentioned I started my higher ed career at the Education Trust as an intern, and that was back when Katie Haycock, who was the founder of EdTrust, was still leading the organization. And one thing that I just learned from her and has always stuck with me is to set high expectations, both for yourself and for those around you, and really demonstrate a true belief that people can rise to meet those expectations. You know, she really set those high expectations and pushed us all to achieve them, and was, and you know, to your point about making sure everything was really solidly buttoned up and diligently researched, that's because she made sure that everything we put out the door was of the highest quality, because we are standing up for students who often don't have a voice and often aren't listened to. And so we had to put our best foot forward in doing all of that. I think that's been one of the great lessons that I've learned from leaders. I also worked with, in a number of different capacities, Jennifer Engel, who's now at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but she actually hired me at EdTrust, and then we worked together at IHEP as well. And she has this dogged determination that I have learned from that helps to get to that you know, really solid final product to put out. And I can remember this time we were working together at IHEP, and we were working on this paper, and it was almost finished. And we'd been working on it for a long time, and we were so ready to have this thing finished and out the door. And I vividly remember her calling me while we were so close to it and saying, you know what, I had an idea about a way to make this better, and I know we want it over with, but this is really going to make it better if we go back and do this additional, you know, aspect of the work. And it was so hard to, at that point, pause and think, oh my gosh, we need to work on this more. But it did make it better. And because of that added work that we put in at that, you know, 11th hour, it got over the finish line and ended up being such a stronger product as part of it. And so she had that determination, but she also had that sort of empathy to say, I know this is really hard, but here's the benefits of doing it. And I think that's an important part of leadership too, is acknowledging with folks what's going to be challenging about the work and why it's important to do it anyway. And then finally, I'll just say, even my most recent supervisor, Michelle Asha Cooper, is the longtime president at IHEP, and she has now gone on she's in a senior leadership role at the Department of Education. And she's someone who always taught me that I need to stand up for myself and advocate for myself as a leader, and advocate for the organization. And so even if there were some times where things weren't going great for me or for the organization or for someone on the team. And she really pushed me to say, you've got to go have that hard conversation with the person. And you've got to stand up for yourself, because if you don't stand up for yourself, who is going to? And that's something that has really stuck with me, that it's important to have those hard conversations. So as we think about like how to give advice to people who are starting in their careers right now, you know, I think about back to that internship at EdTrust. I was tasked with this pretty mundane task of color coding Excel spreadsheets. And I would spend hours and hours on end just color coding these spreadsheets and making sure the grid lines were right. And when I went to sleep at night, like they were emblazoned on the back of my eyelids, these spreadsheets. And even though that was pretty boring, I threw myself into it and I said, you know what, I'm going to get every single one of these spreadsheets perfectly right. And I'm going to make sure that they are solid, because we're presenting them to university and system leaders at the end of the day. And so it's important for them to be right. So that's what I would encourage other folks to do. When you're early in your career, you might have some pretty boring tasks. You might have some things that aren't that exciting. Help think through what the connections are with the ultimate outcome and throw your full self into it, because people will notice.
How do you bring the insights that you've gained sort of through your career to your leadership? How has that influenced how you lead? What do you want to be known for as a leader? What are your core goals?
That's a great question. You know, I think it's a challenge day to day, right? Because especially in nonprofit leadership, and Bridget, you recognize this, every day is completely different. And you have a completely different challenge, maybe one that you never anticipated popping up that day. Coming back to those core values or core, you know, things that we've identified are powerful in leading a team, and reminding myself of it along the way to make sure that I can be the best leader that I can be, especially for my team, to be there for them. I think, you know, in terms of how I want to be known, I think being an empathetic leader is an important part, you know, especially with all we've been through in the last 2 years, through the pandemic and through all the challenges of virtual work, showing empathy to people and to the team as everyone is going through all of these challenges is incredibly important. I've, you know, I talked about a few leaders who I've worked with another one who I continue to work with. She's still at IHEP, Lacey Leegwater. She's essentially our chief of operations. And she, throughout the pandemic and on, has always come back to how are we going to support our staff? How are we going to support our team? And how are we going to make sure that we understand what it is that's driving them, that's motivating them, and what challenges they're wrestling with at any point. And that's really necessary in order for us all to do our best work and in order us to really meet those high expectations that we want to meet, is having that empathy for each other.
To shift to a little bit, I guess, of policy substance more, I'm curious about the change that you, from your vantage point, obviously you are keenly aware of just how critical public policy is and how much it will affect far more institutions than just system work or individual institutional work. So it's super important, but I'm curious about, from that vantage point, what's needed from higher ed at this moment?
Higher ed needs to shift to make sure that it is focusing squarely and consistently on the needs of students of color and students from low-income backgrounds, the students who, you know, like I mentioned earlier, just historically been left behind by our education system, K-12 and higher education system. And in order to spark the types of mobility and economic mobility and non-economic benefits of higher education, we need to make sure that every policy, every practice is really examined from that perspective of how it's going to impact students and how it's going to impact particularly the most underserved students. You know, through the pandemic, we've seen just dramatic changes within higher education, and we've seen the inequities that have long existed come to the fore in new ways. We've seen them deepen and become more clear. And especially as we've seen enrollment declines over the course of the last 2 years, there are deep impacts there on the generational mobility options for Black, Latinx, American Indian students, underserved Asian American, Pacific Islander students from low-income backgrounds, first-generation college goers. And unless we really focus our conversations squarely on those students, we won't see the type of policy change, practice change that we need to really generate mobility for the years to come. And I think that we've seen also through the pandemic that higher ed can change. You know, when COVID first hit, higher ed on a dime turned and went online, you know, very rapidly. And many institutions also very quickly started to work to meet the needs of students that were very unique in that moment of, you know, perhaps not having Wi-Fi available at home. And so how could the institution meet those students' needs so that they could continue their learning? I think that has all been just such a great example of how higher ed can be nimble and can be innovative and can really meet the needs of the current moment. And I hope that that type of innovation and enthusiasm and student-centricness really continues as we emerge into whatever this new normal ends up being.
I also, one of the things that I'm hearing from that is we've recognized that there is, we have to change how we're doing our work. We have to change who we prioritize and the voices that we elevate. But also, one of the things that's very clear coming out of COVID is just how much higher ed needs to listen to students. And I think that's why we're seeing so much more emphasis on learner voice. And that's kind of everywhere because we were caught off guard and just how lucky we had gotten for decades. We had been able to, you know, the right things had been trickled to the top if students shared an issue, but we really don't have, institutions are not set up to consistently integrate feedback from students. And if they were, we would have caught some of these major issues that really surprised us a long time before. I think I just want to shift now to our last little segment, which is I want to hear from you. And you shared a little bit about some of the best advice you've gotten, but I'm just wondering if there's one piece of advice that for you is kind of a touchstone in your career journey as a leader, as you think about your work.
You know, I'll actually give a piece of advice that I've gotten outside the professional realm, but that has helped me all along. And that's been from my dad. My dad's a big skier. He loves skiing, and he taught me to ski when I was really little. And so it's something we've always done together. And I don't know if you all ski, but one thing that can happen is especially if you're maybe pushing your limits on going down a mountain that's going to challenge you, you can get really tense and just sort of grip your poles and do everything you can not to crash and not to fall. And you can get down to the bottom of the mountain and realize you didn't breathe, you didn't take a single breath the entire way down. And one thing that my dad has always advised me to do is to remember to breathe. You know, think about that experience of skiing down the mountain and not breathing. What you need to do is take those deep breaths, keep your focus on things so that you don't crash, so that you don't fall down. And that applies so much to my professional work, especially in leadership. You know, the adrenaline in this work can just get going so fast, especially in the policy sphere. Things are just sort of moving really quickly in a nonprofit and leading it and having just sort of a variety of challenges pop up here and there. It's easy to just let the adrenaline take you and forget to breathe and take that pause and make sure that you're making the best decisions, that you're gathering the necessary information, that you're taking into account the variety of pieces of advice and insights that people are offering you and the expertise around you, and not just get going so fast that you're gonna, you know, spin over the tops of your skis, but actually keep that breath going so that you can accomplish what you're ultimately trying to accomplish.
And when you're giving advice to the interns who now come to IHEP, is there any one piece of advice that you find yourself most consistently sharing or a book you recommend most consistently? What is something that you find yourself saying a lot?
I'd say, you know, as I was hinting at before, you know, throw yourself into this. Every job, every internship, every task is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to show folks what you have to offer, what you can bring to the table. And so rise to that occasion, you know, even if it seems like it's not the most exciting thing, show how you can shine. So show how you can make it your own and do your best on it. I also frequently encourage folks to get out there and network, get out there and meet with people. I think especially in the higher ed space and the higher ed policy world, people are really, really eager to talk and to build connections and build relationships. And so having those coffees and those lunches and just getting to know people in the field so that you then have this network of people to reach out to and to lean on when there are challenges. And I think that's an incredibly important part. And then the third piece of advice I'd say is just read. Read a lot, you know, read Inside Higher Ed when it comes out, read Politico Pro's education piece, read articles as they're coming out, you know, related to the work, and really build your own knowledge base as you're diving in here so that you can become the experts in the field very rapidly.
That's great. Thank you, Mamie, for joining us today. It's been wonderful to hear a little bit about your background. I think a strong case for public policy as a potential career avenue, and just how to cultivate your career for the long haul and how to be thinking about things that might feel small as significant opportunities to really demonstrate your competence. Thank you for joining us, and Doug, for being an excellent co-host. For those of you at home, we are very much looking forward to our next episode, which will feature the president of University of Texas, San Antonio. So we look forward to that. And otherwise, we hope that you have a wonderful week ahead.